Hey there, welcome to Season 2, Episode 27, also known as Episode 59 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me from IP address 54.167.104.253 is Rob.
I want to say I didn't do it. It wasn't me. And if anyone doesn't get that IP address joke, you will during our topic.
Who doesn't get a good IP address joke?
Exactly, yeah. So what's going on?
Let's see here. What is going on? Oh, so like for my game pick this week, I wrote an article. That's actually why I was playing the game. And I'll put it, maybe there'll be a link to it in the show notes, maybe not.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, my game club pick was a little game called Tombs and Treasure, which is a port of a game called Azteca 2. So I just did a little article comparing how the two are different other than the language.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Obviously, they're different languages. And there's not a ton of differences, but there are a couple, like, little weird things. Like, when the game starts, your party is in a different location in each version. Just kind of weird oddball things like that.
Weird. Well, yeah, we'll get into it during the that segment, yeah.
And what else? I watched a little bit of Summer Games Done Quick. I'm going to watch a little more tomorrow, maybe. So I watched a Kid Icarus one. That was like a complete playthrough, although there was a lot of skipping. And then the really crazy Zelda 2 reverse boss run.
How does that work?
You fight all the bosses. Well, so in Zelda 2, there's like two last bosses. There's like the big floating evil angel looking thing. I don't know what he's called. And then there's Shadow Link. Spoiler alert. So in the reverse boss run, you fight that big angel thing first, then go backwards through all the other bosses in reverse order, and then you go back and fight Shadow Link. So yeah, it's a pretty crazy run. Lots of skipping. You know, Zelda 2 is one of those games where you know has a lot of glitches, and there's all these little things you can do to kind of warp around the map pretty quickly.
Yeah, I watched some of Summer Games Done Quick, but I can't remember what I caught.
I think tonight, the night that we're recording, there is like a Twilight Princess run.
Ooh.
I was thinking of actually putting that on TV, then my wife would be like, "What are you watching?" Like, what's someone playing Twilight Princess HD really fast? And she'll say, "All right, change it." Yeah, so it's tonight. It's started about 10 minutes ago, but it's projected to go until 10:30 Central.
Okay.
So tons of time to catch that. And then, I don't know, tomorrow they got like some Virtual Boy games, or at least one Virtual Boy game, and Link's Awakening and Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, there's a big block of Sonic the Hedgehog games tomorrow, so I will probably watch a bunch of those. Night Trap, but that's at 2 in the morning, so unless I'm suffering insomnia or incredibly intoxicated, I'm going to miss that one. What have you been up to?
Not much. I mean, we should announce to the listeners that, like, this is very early after our last recording in terms of how we usually record, but I'll be out of town again, so we kind of had to. But so I haven't been up to too much. You know, just got another level higher and or two in Final Fantasy Remake, and just playing our game club games. And my Koru came in the mail, which if you listen to our interview with Bob from RetroRGB.com, that is a composite to component transcoder that has zero latency that plugs directly into the OSSC, which is a component to HDMI or VGA transcoder. So I have those things. I'm actually looking at them right now. I got those things plugged in together. I got them finally set up and working. And actually took a while to get them looking good with scan lines. And like, you could do a bunch of different profiles. Like, there's like an OSSC profiles.com or something like that. And this guy made a little JavaScript engine that creates cool profiles for you, like stuff that makes the NES look the best, or stuff that makes the NES with the RGB mod look the best, that kind of thing. I couldn't get a bunch of those working, so I'm just kind of going with something I created that kind of looks great, you know, between most of the systems. And yeah, I'm excited to kind of get this thing squared away and kind of tuck it behind my, you know, media center, something you don't really want to look at much. And hopefully be better at video games, because yeah, what he told me, I was like having like 5 to 9 frames of lag just from how I was doing my transcoding. So this is 0 frames. So should be a bit better. But yeah, I could definitely see. Is this the kind of thing that could like suck you in down a rabbit hole, or are you totally happy with your setup?
I'm pretty happy my setup. Mm. I did get, you know, like, I've done some upgrades, you know, component cables, that kind of stuff, but I don't really obsess over it. It's mostly, I just don't want the picture to look funky on a real TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, like, I'm definitely, like, not an audiophile or videophile, so any of this, like, real kind of minutia stuff I can't get into.
Well, for me, it's, you know, kind of my weird setup where it sounds crazy, but, like, I don't have to, but the best way for this area in my house to have a setup like this is with a projector, and just dealing with that has been a nightmare, and this is kind of the answer to that. And I also am a bit sick of dealing with emulation for everything. Like, I own many of these games we play. I own many SD card upgraded consoles and stuff like that. Like, so I want to stop emulating as much, and you know, this will help get me there. I should say that with all this setup, what's it called? The M Classic doesn't work well with it. I don't know why, but I had to disable it for it to look well while it was upscaling. So I'll look into that. But
yeah,
I'm just going to pose this question now for our listeners. Like, I'd really like to know how our listeners play retro games. You know, tell us about your full chain. You know, are you going from a real console through some of these transcoders to, you know, whatever kind of TV, whether it's RGB, CRT, or flat panel, you know, email at retrogameclub.net. I'm really interested.
Yeah, so I see that like, they sell the Koru here on a site called videogameperfection.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm more I got about, it. Yeah, more about video game adequacy, right? I don't need the perfect experience. It's like, to me, I don't know. It's not quite the same, but it's like the people who buy $500 cables for their stereo setup.
Yeah, yeah. That's not it for me. It's really just anytime I'm bad at a game, I'm assuming it's latency lately. So I just want to get past that. That's what this is helping me do.
Yeah, but it's really not latency.
Yeah, it's me. It's my old man fingers.
Yeah, it's also why I'm playing games on easy mode now, you know, like, I'm not quite as good as I was 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. No shame in that. Should we dive in?
Yeah, we got a pretty good amount of news for only, like, having 3 days in between episodes.
Yeah, we even have a lot saved for next episode.
So let's see here. Tiny consoles. Tiny Sega consoles. So these are little tiny model Sega consoles that I guess you can purchase.
Yes, this is on Kotaku. And these tiny Sega consoles are not for people to play with, but they're for action figures. So apparently there are a line of Sega action figures like Virtua Fighter, and it looks like Space Channel 5. And these are little consoles that your action figures can play with. So, So there you go. They're for pre-order
they sell
now too.
The site that you can pre-order these from has, I don't recognize what 90% of these are, but they have a lot of anime figures, it looks like.
Mm.
And possibly some of these are from games. I don't know all these characters.
Yeah. I mean, these little things look cool, but they're like the size of Micro Machines at best. So I don't think I'll be getting that one, but I thought some of our listeners might like it.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that. Also, things I'm going to pass on. $500 SNK Neo Geo arcade cabinet with 50 preloaded games.
And
this is a bar top, though. This is not a real standee, is it?
No, it's a bar top, but I think you could get a stand with for a it.
Separate base, yeah.
It's not big at all. So if you picture a Neo Geo four slot cab, because it has the four marquees at the top, it looks like that with both player one and two controls, but it's only 20 inches wide, not even. I mean, you're really shoulder to shoulder with your buddy playing like that. A little too small. There's a 17 inch monitor in there. But of the 50 games, 10 games are King of Fighter, mm-hmm. 8 games are Fatal Fury, and 6 games of Metal Slug and 6 games of Samurai Showdown. So it's not like you're getting a broad selection. Like that's a lot of cool games. You know, I'm not really into Fatal mm-hmm. Fury or King of Fighters too much. I really like the latter two, but
but you can get these. I mean, you could buy a Neo Geo collection for the PlayStation 2 for $1 or whatever. I don't know. It's not $1. Whatever goes for on eBay, probably more than $1 now.
Yeah, yeah.
And get more games. Or at least more variety of games, I should say. Maybe not more total, but more variety.
Yeah, so I'll pass on this too. $500, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot, yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's cheaper than going out and actually collecting those games.
Mm-hmm.
Because Neo Geo, I think, is the most expensive system to collect.
Oh, yeah, I would say so too. I would like to say to our listeners too that, like, don't make the same mistake I have 100 times, not 100, but many, where you think you could just buy an old arcade cab and, you know, put a screen in it and some innards in it. And, you know, for a few hundred dollars, you will have a nice arcade cab that's a multi-cab.
Mm-hmm.
You end up spending a lot more money than you really think you would. So, it adds up fast and a lot of time too.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the problem for me. It's the time commitment. Like, I'd be willing to spend $500 for like a really good arcade cabinet that I could just run anything in.
Well, exactly. I mean, for probably double that, you could get a full size cab pristine with pretty much every game that plays pretty well, you know? So I don't know.
Back to miniature arcade things. out on Hackaday, someone has built a miniature Star Wars arcade cabinet.
Yeah, this thing is pretty. This is something I would like, but everyone that listens to this knows that that's like my favorite arcade cab. It looks like it has the 3D designs like on Thingiverse or something on here.
This is pretty cool. It's a cool repro system. I don't think it's practical to play.
No.
Because it's not very big, but I think looking at the person that created this and the rest of their arcade collection, he didn't really be able to play it either. I think he's a very big fan of the Star Wars arcade games and just wanted to do this.
Yeah, yeah. This is very nice. So, good job to whatever his name is.
To that person and the thing they did. Yes. Do you like playing game systems where you have to like crank the system to charge it?
I've never played one, but I am intrigued.
I've never played one either. I don't think I ever will. So this is about a system called the Playdate. And because it's a system that exists, someone has ported Doom to it.
Yes. I think we reported on Playdate on one of our first episodes.
Yeah, probably. It's a neat little hobby. I mean, I can't ever see myself playing one of these just because I don't like effort, and this takes some effort. But it's pretty like a system like this that had a battery, I would probably own.
Yeah. I'm so conflicted on this. So if you look at the video of Doom, once you get the rail gun, is that what it's called? The chain gun, thank you. You have to turn the crank for it to shoot. Which is a good idea, but also kind of annoying. Kind of like when you have to
screen. There's just not enough buttons, right? It's a two-button system.
Yeah. I wonder how this system's going to do. I really do.
Some number of nerds are going to buy it. it's going to be like the Ouya, you know, like enough people will buy it that they'll recoup whatever they invested, but it's not going to change the world.
No. Another mention of RetroRGB.com here. How did Resident Evil 2 manage to fit on a single Nintendo 64 cart? And
yes.
Yeah. This,
because yes, that was also a CD game, right? And that was also
PlayStation 1 game. Yeah. And he really goes into the coding on how they did this. And I only got halfway through this video because of time. And it's only a 12-minute video. But from what I got from it, and you should definitely watch this video. It was good. I just ran out of time. They did math and science to compress the video and then also make it 15 frames. And then with their math and science and I think a little bit of magic as well, maybe sorcery, they just used programming to figure out what that middle frame would be between each frames. And it looks great. I mean, I remember playing Resident Evil 2 and watching this video. It looks fine. It looks like full motion video. Well, 3D video, you know. What I didn't understand about it, though, and maybe they go into it in the later part of this explanation, is like they had to do all this because, you know, videos are big and Nintendo 64 is a cart. You only had so many megabytes. And why did it have to be a video? Because the graphics in the video look the same as what the Nintendo 64 could render. So why did it have to be pre-rendered? You know what I mean? Why couldn't it just play out in 3D, you know? So if anyone knows, please let me know the answer to that.
Let's see. Someone cleaned a Sonic the Hedgehog statue. That's pretty thrilling.
Well... Well, this is strange. So I don't know if anyone knows about this statue, but 90 minutes out of Osaka, in the middle of the woods, there has been this giant Sonic statue on a snowboard. Mm-hmm. And it's just been there for the longest time, and no one knows who put it there. And now it's fully polished and refurbished, and no one knows who did that either.
Yeah, except there's an update at the end where they explain who owns the statue and that he's probably the one who polished it.
Oh, yeah. So they figured it all out.
So it's man polishes Sonic statue.
There you go. That's the real news. Thanks, Polygon.com.
Yeah. Thank you for the gripping coverage. New Game Boy Color game is being released.
Yeah. How do you pronounce this? Powa, I guess?
I was not going to make any effort.
I pronounce it Kirby's Dream Land.
Yes.
Because it looks a lot like it, which is a good thing.
Yes, clearly inspired heavily by the Kirby games. And the lead character looks sort of like Kirby in a hat.
Yeah. And
is he an onion? What is he? Is that what he is?
I can't tell what he is. The music in this is pretty impressive, though. I have to say that, you know, good job on these people for creating this game. Does it say if it's going to be for sale or a download? That's a part I did not get to. Shooting for November.
Well, they're taking pre-orders. So.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
So, it looks pretty fun. What else have we got going on? Arcade 1-Up Virtual Fighter Cabinet with Sonic Fighters.
I've never played Sonic Fighters.
I did once, and I believe it was at that weird arcade I went to that was inside an abandoned mall.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure they had Sonic Fighters there. They also had Time Traveler, which is the only place I've ever seen it.
Nice. I'm pretty sure I've played that.
Yeah, I played it. It's not great, but...
Yeah.
This cabinet, though, it's a one-up arcade, so it's got a bunch of other games you might like better, like Virtua Fighter and Virtua Fighter 2.
Yeah, and this is just a rumor so far, but we'll see. I think that one would sell pretty good.
This looks pretty real.
Yeah. It looks like their style.
See, I think SegaPede Astropede. Canceled Sega Genesis Mega Drive prototype.
This looks like a great game. I didn't know about this before reading this and watching this video, but it's kind of hard to explain the gameplay. I mean, you're like a one-piece centipede cartoony body that looks kind of like a Jiminy Cricket, I guess. But and then you collect the rest of your centipede body kind of as you're going through this action platformer.
It looks like it really looks like a Sonic knockoff.
Yeah.
Like the graphics, the like style of like the rocks and the backgrounds, it all looks very Sonic-y. And even kind of the layout of the levels looks pretty Sonic-y.
I really like how this looks. It looks like it plays well. I think this game would have sold well if it came out. I want to play it.
I'm curious. I mean, it doesn't look... It looks like it'd be kind of fun to try out. I don't know if I could get into this too heavily, though.
Now, remember, this is just like a demo kind of at best, right?
Yeah.
Like, they didn't get too far into this, but... I don't know. Hey, did you hear about this before?
I've never heard of this game before.
Yeah, neither had I.
I have never seen it.
Probably one of the biggest stories of the week, I would say. Sonic the Hedgehog ported to the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, now didn't Sega like do this in a commercial once? When they were doing like their Genesis Does commercials, they had like a fake version of Sonic running in the Super Nintendo to show like how slow and terrible Sonic would be.
I do not remember that.
I mean, it's not really an apt comparison because obviously it's like Sega comparing it on their own.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah. Someone has gone ahead and ported it.
Yeah, and they did this because they're writing a game engine for Super Nintendo that they wanted to be Sonic-like, so they figured just start here. And, you know, start with assets that they already have, you know what I mean? And it's pretty interesting, you know, it talks about how Sega had a wider horizontal pixel count. So, you know, that made it a little bit more difficult. And that the game plays almost as well as Sega for the most part. Once it starts loading up on sprites, it does flicker out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it does slow down in a few areas. But other than that, it's pretty right on. Right now, it's only one level. And what else did I want to say about this?
So did they use like a Sonic decompilation for this? Because you can get a decompiled version of Sonic. It's just on GitHub and Sega doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, that's where they say they tell exactly where they started with it. But they did a lot of their own coding to make it better. It's not just like 68,000 to Super Nintendo. Yes, it does slow down in some spots, like I said, but also, like, you could use one of Nintendo's, you know, chips, one of the many chips that can speed up a Super Nintendo, you know what I mean? And make it way faster. So,
sure, you could do Sonic for Super FX or something.
Totally, yeah. So, which is something I'd like to see. So, really cool project with this guy. I'm definitely going to keep my eye on this to see where it goes to. I think this one was yours.
could be. Self-contained tape loader for the ZX Spectrum. Yeah, so this is another Hackaday article where someone has... So someone has put like an Arduino board inside of a cassette case, and you can use it to load ZX Spectrum games from a cassette, but the cassette is actually a very, very small computer.
So I get it. So instead of having to deal with cassettes and their magnetics and whatever, you can, this will just kind of play the WAV file.
It will do something. Yes.
Yes. Where the computer can hear it. I'm using air quotes. Hear it. Yeah. Huh. Wow. It's pretty ingenious, actually.
It is. It's a nice preservation project, right? Because magnetic media isn't going to last forever or even much longer.
Mm-hmm. But these old tape drives will be there, so this could fix that.
Yeah, tape drives will just run forever, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So if you want to do actual hardware and not emulation, I guess. I mean, it's sort of emulation, but it's also kind of not.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
Then another project. This is not a thing that is for sale yet. I was really disappointed. It's the author of this, I think, wants to make this something that will be sold, but it isn't yet. It's called the Zero Terminal V3, and it's a very, very, very small computer based on Raspberry Pi. It sort of looks like an old PDA.
Yeah, it has a little... little keyboard and actually a pretty good size screen, the size of a big phone at least.
Oh yeah, it's bigger than my phone, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I have the Note 2 or 10, whatever. They changed the numbers on the notes. I don't even know what number I have. It's not the 20. I know it skipped ahead a whole bunch.
And it's not a foldable. Foldable.
No, I don't want a foldable phone. That looks like just a recipe for trouble.
Yeah, this looks like a great thing that I hope this is cheap when it comes out, because it would be a great thing just to have in your backpack. And if you need a second computer to help solve a problem, you got one all the time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I hope something like this one day could be like a competitor to the overpriced TI calculators. I mean, your kids are not TI calculator age yet?
No. But I've heard the horror stories.
Yeah, I mean, is there any product that has advanced less but maintain the same price point?
Yeah. There are people that are hacking those cases and putting Raspberry Pis in them and also making them into giant cheating machines.
Right. But you still have to buy the $100 calculator to get to that point.
Yes.
And there's a new Netflix documentary called High Score. I read a review about this on another site and they were not fans.
I read one that was a fan, but... it was specific to the Roberta and Bill Robert. Roberta Roberts. Yeah. And Ken Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I basically heard it was just kind of a very high level nostalgia trip and really didn't go into any detail.
Yeah.
I guess I will probably put it on at some point and judge for myself.
Yeah. I mean, at the very least, it's good background something to be on. And our last news item / topic.
Yes.
LibRetro has been hacked.
So you want to start this one? I'll chime in.
Yeah. Yes.
I think you brought this up.
Yeah. So this is nuts and sad and enraging for me. But when was this? On August 16th, LibRetro's blog, libretro.com, got updated with this. Hacker vandalizes our BuildBot and GitHub organization. So, in short, somebody impersonated a very trusted person in LibRetro on GitHub and sent a blank, like, master, like, they just wiped the repositories pretty much. Mm-hmm. And got a lot of the repositories. And also messed up their BuildBot server, which every night it takes all their latest code and mm-hmm. builds the nightly versions of all the Koras and RetroArch and all the different ports of RetroArch, like, you know, everything from Raspberry Pi to the Vita to the Wii, you know, you name it, they've got it. And the NetPlay lobby's down, yada, yada, yada. So this is crazy. And what's even sadder about this is some of this stuff, like, they don't have the latest builds for or latest code. So GitHub said they can't really help them.
Yeah, I mean, from GitHub's point of view, someone with that you granted admin permissions to did admin stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he impersonated, so someone, yeah, broke in as him somehow. They didn't say how he did that.
Yes, but they didn't, like, hack GitHub, right? They had this, they had access to this person's account, it sounds like.
Somehow, yeah.
Yes.
Or gained access to it, yeah. So, this is crazy. And it's like, and they keep saying, we think we know, we have a good idea of who did it, which means they know who did it. They just can't prove it. You know, they piss someone off. That's what it sounds like, which,
you right. know,
if you're mad at someone, don't ruin it for everyone else. Just go have a Snickers.
Yeah. So I had a few, I wrote down a couple notes about this story. So, like, so if you're not familiar with, like, GitHub and everything, GitHub's an online source code repository. The build server is an interesting thing because, like, at work, you know, in real life, I do software development, and there's always a debate about when you're bringing in some third-party code from GitHub, should you take their binary, should you use the binary code, or should you build it from source yourself? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always, I lean more on the, you should build it from source, because how do you know that the artifact, the thing you're downloading from them, is actually a representation of the code?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can see the code, but then some mysterious process you don't know anything about, then assembles it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on here with when they talk about their build server being compromised, you know, you see the code to RetroArch and then this mysterious server you know nothing about actually builds it. Mm-hmm. And if someone infiltrated that and decided to, like, install a virus or something, right? Like, this attack doesn't look like they were trying to hack other people. It looks like they were trying to damage RetroArch somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, if you're saying, I'm using open source software because I can view the source code, but then you're not actually compiling the code yourself, you're pulling down just the built code, you're not really, you can't guarantee that what you're looking at is the code. Right. Mm-hmm. The code you're looking at is not necessarily in that binary you downloaded. So that's why for security purposes, you should generally build from source, even though it's like an extra step. And you might run into compilation errors. Who knows? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And building from source also, unfortunately, sometimes it's like the first step in the path towards forking an open source project. Which I don't recommend doing unless the project's, like, been completely abandoned or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of one of my points. But they keep saying that they don't think RetroArch binaries were infected. I don't know how they can guarantee that. I just don't know why they are confident that that didn't happen.
Well, it would have had to happen a long time ago because it's not like you could download them now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they're saying is they just have no reason to believe that that mm-hmm. happened, you know? But who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, so there's that. There's, yeah, and again, this whole, like, weird hostility people have towards projects that aren't charging them any money.
Yeah.
This is always something that fascinates me. Like, I've put out a few open source projects. I've done free podcasts. I put out all kinds of free content. It's amazing how many people are like, hey, this free thing that you charged me nothing for has harmed me in some way.
Yes.
Like, I probably get one of those a year, and I'm not, like, really high profile. And it's like, okay, well, sorry, this thing you didn't pay for hurt you somehow. Please go crawl under a rock now.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the emulation community, there's been a lot of that. I mean, there have been, like, other, and they mentioned in their post here, like, other developers who have basically been, you know, chased off the internet by mobs of people that are angry that they're developing free emulators. I don't really understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
like this weird combination of like jealousy and entitlement, I think. Where like maybe you're jealous of this other project or their success, or you just feel like that project owes you something. I don't know why you would feel they owe you something, but I don't understand that mindset. But there are a lot of people who like get stuff for free and feel entitled to it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In emulation, you know, people will get very worked up about very minor things, you know. On Castlevania Bloodlines on stage 4, this pixel's out of place. I'm going to burn your house down, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, yeah, because when I was in music business, we would never give away free emits when compact discs were a thing, but we would never give away free CDs or anything like that, mm-hmm. or really give away free music. It would always be like, just charge 50 cents, charge a dollar, because at that point, it kind of weeds out those people, and also yeah. they seem to respect it more at that point. I don't know, but that's a bit off topic, but it's funny that they put up this guy's IP address, even though which is the address we set at the beginning of the show, which leads back to...
Yeah, it's a VPN. Great. Right? Like,
yeah, it leads back to Amazon Web Services.
Right, so it's the external IP address of an Amazon web server.
That probably no longer exists.
And even if it does, a million other applications have that same IP address.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's the outbound address, right? So, yeah. So they may find out who did this. Maybe they secretly have a really, really strong hunch. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, part of it is like some of it is like the project kind of like they mentioned not having great backups. And part of it is like, yeah, the project grew beyond what unpaid maintainers can keep up with, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I did email the people I know at RetroArch, and they did not write me back yet, but they probably have their hands full. You know, and I just asked them, like, what do you need in terms of backing this up? You know, I might be able to donate a lot of space and bandwidth. You know, just let me know. So hopefully I could do what I can to help with this, if they need any help, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in anyone's way, but yeah, it's a great project, and it really sucks to see this happen to it, because who knows how long it'll take them to get back up and running, which leads me to my next thing. Like, don't update your RetroArch. Just leave whatever you have. Just leave it until
until he sorts this thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my advice is, one, set up two-factor authentication on every account you have that supports it.
Yeah.
And make sure you back up your stuff a lot. And I know in their case, it's not that they weren't backing up, but that they really didn't have the infrastructure to keep up with what, you know, how big the project had gotten and how often there were changes. So just personally, like if you're worried about like ransomware or other attacks that maybe are targeted at you, yeah, go ahead and, you know, two-factor authentication, back up everything.
Yeah, at that point, you're pretty squared away. But, you know, that just gets me thinking, like, I think of GitHub as one of my backups. And also, mm-hmm. I always have something on a hard drive. Like, people are working on every single, I mean, it seems like every single aspect of RetroArch, from the cores, from the installers, from all that stuff, all the time. So I have a feeling not a lot is going to be lost. It's just going to be a lot of coordination getting the latest back up and working, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would never consider GitHub to be like my backup, right? It's a company. They're owned by Microsoft. Microsoft could one day decide they're done with free developer accounts. Like there's no, if you're not paying, if you don't have like a paid GitHub account, I don't think you can really like guarantee it's always going to be there. Microsoft does not notoriously shut stuff down that much. But like if Google code was your backup, right?
But what I mean is that if GitHub is your backup, for me, mm-hmm. what I'm saying for me is GitHub is my backup. Therefore, if GitHub went down, my primary would still be available to make another backup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, just buy like a Amazon S3 bucket or something and put all your stuff there.
Well, I also use, yeah, Google storage for all my stuff. It does it automatically. And, but yeah, any, closing thoughts or feelings about this?
No, I mean, I obviously feel, you know, I feel bad for them. It's a really horrible situation to clean up, especially when, you're not being paid to do any of it. Like, you know, they talk about they want to get their Patreon up to like $1,300 a month. And, you know, that's not really a lot of money. Like, no one's quitting their job for $1,300 a month.
And also, backing up stuff is always annoying and seems pointless until something like this happens. Where, you know, I created the bounty to make RetroArch run faster with hardware acceleration on the Vita. And that got $1,200 of bounty. And someone did it. You know what I mean? So, and people, like, I didn't pay that much. You know, I was one of many, many people who donated to that. But my point is that the cool features like that will get the money and the developers first, not backups, which no one cares about until something like this happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. But yeah, it's kind of crazy. Game Club, huh?
Yeah, yeah. You want to go first?
Sure, yeah. I played that fun drinking game by Bally Midway, Tapper. I think it was, what, 83? Wait, when was that from?
Yeah, it was probably right around arcade crash time.
Yeah, yeah, we'll call it December 15th, 83. So, yeah, close enough. But developed by Marvin Glass and Associates, who also did stuff like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Yeah, so if you haven't played this one somehow, you play a bartender at a very strange setup of a bar or pub, and you have people walking in the door and slowly creeping up the bar, and you have to pour and slide down glasses full of beer towards them. And you go up and down to get to the different bars and back and forth to our right and left to get closer to them. And maybe pick up the tips they left you, or them sliding the empty glasses back at you. And if they get all the way to the end of the bar, they can attack you in a very funny way. Mm-hmm. And you can also lose by not giving them a beer fast enough, or which they would get to the end of the bar. Or they slide the glass back to you and it breaks on the ground. And yeah, this is a very fun game. It's not a game that I can relax to. This game actually kind of stresses me out.
Yeah, it's very frantic.
Yeah, yeah. I would not be a good bartender by any means. I think my high score on this is only like 25,000. Okay. But it's not one I played much.
So you've never made it up to like the crazy, like you're serving drinks on a UFO level.
I didn't even know that existed.
Okay.
Does that exist?
Yeah. Why would I make that up?
I don't know. You never know. But
okay.
So yeah, at the end of each level, you drink a beer or two, and there's a little I guess like mini game where you have to figure out which beer can this little, I don't know, like thief-looking guy. He shook up all your beers, and you have to pick the one he didn't shake up, which I don't think I've ever gotten that correct either. But yeah, this is a good game. It does make me want to play kind of the spiritual successor, Timber.
Ooh, no, you do not want to play Timber. Have you played Timber?
Not since it was like new in the arcade.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, graphically, it looks a lot like Tapper, but it is not nearly as fun.
Yeah, this is, even though this is a frantic game, this is a fun game. And I do think more of a party game. Sitting here playing it by yourself, I don't think is as fun as if you have, you know, if you're with a buddy or two and playing this while actually having a few drinks. I should mention that the original version of this was sponsored by Anheuser-Busch. The later versions are root beer.
Just generic root beer. And then some of the other home ports were sponsored by Pepsi or Mountain Dew.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mountain Dew might actually be Pepsi. I don't remember who makes Mountain Dew.
Yeah, Mountain Dew is Pepsi.
But there were Pepsi and Mountain Dew branded versions for some of the home systems. Not all of them, just some. So I think it depends. You know, so your mileage may vary.
So I play the arcade port on MAME, and I play the Atari 2600 port. And that was, I thought that was a great port. It didn't look nearly as good, but it was a little bit easier, and it played really well, I thought. But those are the only two that I was able to play. Have you played any other ones?
I played like some CGA version back in the day, but I was playing the arcade version that's on a collection.
Okay.
But yeah, I got up to about like the punk bar. So if I remember the progression, it's like regular old school saloon, and then you're at like, I don't know, a college game outdoor or something.
Thing. Yeah.
And then there's a few stages at a punk bar, and then it's like you're the best bartender on earth. So now you're like serving drinks in a UFO.
Okay.
To aliens. I'm serious. Yeah.
No,
and
no,
I have made it to the UFO stage before. I did not this time, but I have in the past. I don't think I've ever cleared the UFO stages, though.
So what's up with these bars? Okay, so if anyone here, you know, knows what a bar is like,
you're walking through the. Knows what a bar is like.
Yeah, you walk in through the front door, and the bar is usually against the back wall or a wall. In this, it's like four bars going horizontally in the middle of a room.
Right, like a Bavarian style, right? Where it's one big long table.
Right out the front door. So people just like they're walking in through the front door and screaming at you from beers from like 50 feet away.
Yeah. And then you slide a few down. And if they're close enough to the edge, right, you knock them off. But if they're not, then they finish their drink and throw the empty glass back. And you have to catch the empty glass and get them another beer.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've cleared everybody, right, the stage is over. The problem is if you don't clear everybody, then more characters start spawning.
Mm-hmm.
Like each stage will literally have an unlimited number of patrons if you don't clear them all.
And I think that's why that's the part I'm not good at or possibly didn't understand enough that.
So you just figured each stage had like 100 people you had to clear?
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this is not ending. Like I would just kind of wait for, you know, I would send them the beer, they would drink it, they would send it back, I would send them another one. Like, wow, this person's drinking a lot.
Right, you got to get them off the screen. Like you can clear a lot of those stages just on the first pass.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, the later you get in the game, if you don't clear the stage on the first pass, you're going to be on that stage forever.
Here we go. First level, Western Saloon with cowboys for two screens. The next three screens, sports bar with athletes. Then four screens at a punk rock bar. And then four screens in outer space with aliens. And then on Wikipedia, if you click on the link for aliens, it takes you to the extraterrestrial life article in Wikipedia, just in case they just needed that one extra link back. Oh, wow. So, yeah, not much more to say about that one. How about your game?
Yeah, so I was playing Tombs and Treasure, a game I played through quite a while ago, mostly because I wanted to do this article. I just compared the Japanese and U.S. versions and, you know, found a few little subtle differences. So this is a kind of like a Shadowgate style game, in that you go to different rooms and you have a bunch of commands like, you know, look, hit, take, you know, put, that kind of stuff. The perspective is a lot like Shadowgate, except you're traveling in an overworld from one location to another. Mm-hmm. There are enemy fights, but the enemy fights are really just they're binary. You either win the fight or you lose it, based on your level. Like there's no level grinding. Like the enemies are kind of just there to sort of force you to go through these dungeons in a particular order. That's kind of really their only purpose. The original game, most of the staff worked on the original East. It's almost one for one in terms of staff, although the games themselves are not really very similar other than like the overworld sprites look a little bit like the original, you know, the first version of East sprites.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the games don't really have anything in common. But yeah, it's a neat little, you know, puzzle game. Some of the puzzles are hard. It is possible to get into a unwinnable state. Like there's actually a point where the game will tell you, you have to press reset and try again.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause you can literally get stuck in a room if you do things out of order. I mean, there's saves, there's a password that's about the size of a novel, I guess. I don't know why the password is so complicated for this. I think maybe they're afraid people are going to hack it. I don't know. But yeah, the password is fairly long. For the amount of stuff it has to save, it's pretty long. And yeah, this has not gotten a whole lot of other ports. I mean, it was originally, you know, like a FM7 game, and you know, got ported over to Famicom by a third party, and then in the U.S., Infocom localized it to English. Infocom, you know, was famous for doing Zork games. I guess they wanted to get into the console game business, so they picked something that was an adventure game that mm-hmm. they could stick their name on. That's one of the version differences, is like how big Infocom puts their name on this game. Versus like the original game is just, you know, the Falcom and then the company that ported it. And in the US version, it's like Infocom. Like they are really trying to drill home the point that Infocom did this game.
Yeah.
Not saying the translation effort isn't work, just they didn't make the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So do you like this game?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I did. I mean, I like Shadowgate. You know, I actually played this after I'd already played Shadowgate. So I played Shadowgate first. And I like this style of game. You know, Shadowgate, Uninvited, Deja Vu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you don't like that style of game, you're of course not going to like this.
Yeah, and that's where I land with these. Yeah, like nothing against the game at all. Just not for me, you know?
Yeah, it's not the style you like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Any closing thoughts on it?
No. I mean, there's really kind of no way to legally get this game today other than overpaying on eBay, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, there's, it's not like, in any collections.
Yeah, there's some version that's like on the Saturn, but it's also Japan only.
Mm.
It's in a collection. They didn't like port this game to Saturn. It's way too short to port to Saturn. It's on a collection of other games for Saturn. What games do you want to talk about next time?
I'm going to do one that is currently on the Switch Online thing, Wrecking Crew.
Mm-hmm.
How about you?
I'm going to do a game. I'm going to stick with the same style of game or similar style of game, and I'm going to go with Snatcher.
Nice. I'm excited to check. It's been so long since I've checked that out. I can't wait to get into that one.
Yep. And, I came up with that one because my youngest kid is secretly inventorying my game collection to figure out how much she can sell it for one day. And no, I'm not joking. And Snatcher is like possibly the most expensive game I have based on current eBay prices.
Huh.
I paid almost nothing for it.
I believe it, yeah.
But it's like a $1,500 game on eBay now.
That's insane. That's crazy.
It's, yes, it is insane.
Well, listeners, if you play any of these games or any retro games in general, have any cool retro projects or topic ideas or anything you want to talk about, email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net, or Twitter at RGC Podcast. And Jim sent us a small email just because I wrote in saying, like, hey, we're going to record soon after our last show, so get in some emails. And he just wrote, yep, nothing to report, but Myst still sucks.
All right. Still not a fan of Myst. I guess I'll agree that it probably hasn't aged that well, but was Man, yeah. We sold so many copies of that game. I can't even tell you how well that game sold.
I've purchased at least 2 copies.
Yeah, I have a couple. Do I have a 3DO version of it? Seems like I should know that. I think I do.
Myst doesn't seem very polarizing. It just kind of seems like something that exists.
Yeah, it's an artifact of its time.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty sure I have it on 3DO. I think it's a game you can win in like 30 seconds if you know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Majors writes in to reminisce a little about the Windows 95 launch. He remembers that there was a midnight launch at CompUSA for it and wondered, you know, why people would buy an OS at midnight. Because what are you going to do? Stay up all night installing it? And that is a good question. Why would you buy an OS at midnight? The Amico launch date, which I think we both missed, the new launch date is 4/3/21.
Oh, I did not pick up on that.
So he says they must be taking a page from the Dreamcast there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
4/3/21, yes. Oh, now I can't wait for that day to be over because I bet you there's going to be a bunch of other tacky stuff that day.
Oh, yeah.
The Sega executive in the Beef Bowl comment. He's pondering whether it's time to stop the equivalent phrase of living in your mom's basement that we have here. No. I'm hanging on to that one. Wants to recommend a book called Media Snatchers that discusses the legacy of the TurboGrafx and PC Engine. It is by Penguin. Or it's published by Penguin, I should say. Penguin did not write it. They're a book publisher.
No.
I know far more about the book publishing industry than I should. It's got a very 90s cover. You're not supposed to judge a book by that, but I guess I'd be curious to hear a review and see how it is. It's published by MIT Press. Huh. Almost like I can be using it in a classroom. Rob, not aware of the Sega R360. He's very ashamed of you for that.
He'll get over it.
Okay. Social media question about your favorite ROM hack. He thinks most ROM hacks are silly, but when Tapper was mentioned, he recalled a fun hack where they replaced the customers in Tapper with different sports fans. Okay. I can see that. And do like your city version of Tapper with whatever. Like you could have a Chicago one where you're serving Malort or something to people. Have you had Malort on any of your trips to Chicago?
No, I have not.
Okay. You don't want to do that. Also, you wouldn't serve it in a beer glass, but you have heard of it though, right?
No.
Okay. Even better.
What is it?
Malort is a hard liquor that is only sold in Chicago. It's wormwood. It is known for its unique aftertaste.
Okay.
I would say it tastes like grapefruit with aftertaste of burnt rubber. There are other descriptions I've heard too, but it's kind of a rite of passage for the past 80 years or so for people to drink Malort when they turn 21. But now, in recent years, the hipsters have discovered Malort and now it's really popular again.
Oh, jeez.
Candy style of cab from 1UP. Said he would concur this would be neat, but the size and the fact players sit down at Candy Cab might cause some design issues.
Yeah.
I think that's not an issue at all. And us butchering email like I'm doing right now. Says, yes, you're obviously we're recording these at the end of the day, but a lot of people write these while intoxicated. And if you work in a corporate environment, you should be used to disjointed emails.
Yeah, so this is a symbiotic relationship we have.
But at work, I never read emails out aloud.
You should start doing that when you're back in the office.
When I'm back in the office, yes. I'm sure the people in my open office floor plan will really appreciate that.
Or even better, just have your email client automatically read out loud all your emails.
Yeah, that would be really great.
All right, that social media question of the week from Zach was, tell us your favorite retro game ROM hacks. And he just posted it like today, so we only really got one.
Yeah, talking about color correction hacks, which are cool. I do like those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have to say, you know, those most recent Mario hacks have really impressed me, like Mario Freedom and Starlight Mario. But have you ever seen Mega Man in Mushroom Kingdom?
No, I haven't.
It's a Mega Man 1 hack that brings in a lot of Mario 1 and 3 elements into it.
Okay.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I kind of gathered really well. That from the name.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, the email address again is email@retrogameclub.net. And I think that wraps her up.
Yeah, I think so. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.